So at the beginning of the day, we have this tradition to pay respects to the Triple Gems, the Buddha, Dhamma, the Sangha, offering incense, lighting candles, these are external signs of our commitment, of our interest in practicing this path, walking this path of awareness. In which our experience are witnessed rather than followed during this time. Not that witness and action are incompatible, it's not the case at all, but at this during this retreat we are in a position of being a witness. This is an awareness, seeing. Ajahn Sumedho used the words knowing, the knowing mind. And we chant the various qualities of those three refuges, quality of the Buddha. The Buddha knows the worlds, knower of the worlds. And the Buddha is the awakened one, the one who is awake, who knows. And what does the Buddha know? What does the awakened mind know in this very moment? From one moment to the next, you can't really know a lot. It's not like accumulating facts and figures, adding on and subtracting and working out things. It's just knowing, witnessing. It's a very different quality that we're not usually conscious of, that quality of awareness. We tend to be absorbed, to get involved with our mind, our body, to believe in them, to believe in their reality. We tend to make our worlds, the various worlds that we create throughout the day, very real, very solid. This is why one of the qualities of the Buddha is knowing the world, a knower of the world. He's not deluded, he just knows that what has arisen in consciousness is just a reason, and when it passes, it knows it passes, it has passed. So this is what we can know that much now, that whatever experience is arising in this moment, we are aware it's arising, and we are aware of change. When we are in that position of witnessing, we are aware of the law of anicca. Anicca means impermanence. As soon as we put ourselves in a position of the witness, then we can see all that is changing. The movements of our mind and body, the movements of sensations and thoughts, the movements of perceptions and memories and feelings and so on, the whole . And we are aware when the mind is very tense, when the mind is relaxed, when the mind is happy. These are the various worlds that arise in consciousness. We know that you feel at ease, you know when you feel uptight, worried, anxious, greedy, angry. The awakened mind knows that. This is a complete change in consciousness. When you are taking refuge in awareness, you are suddenly out of the world. You're not in the world anymore. You can participate in the world, but you're not believing. Whatever arises, whatever world arises, is real, is permanent, unchangeable, solid, and consequently the way we experience the world is also seen as it is, as changing, moving, flowing, fluid, in its fluid state, rather than solid entity that we battle with, struggle. So you can say to yourself that the amount of struggle you're experiencing right now is in proportion with the amount of reality you impart to your experience. This is a good sign. It's not saying that by thinking like that, we dismiss our experience, we dismiss the suffering that we're going through, or the difficulties, or anything like that. It's not a dismissal, but it's just for you a recognition that whenever we identify with anything, the stronger the identification, the stronger the suffering. And the last thing we want to do when we recognize that is to judge ourselves, as to pass judgment, saying, well, if I was unattached, then I wouldn't be suffering. How stupid I am to be attached. This is not the path of practice. That's just a thought, a judgment, another thought. You can see judgment as a thought that has a reason and that will pass. So awareness is not doesn't have any agenda. It's just this clear seeing. It sees suffering, it sees pain, it sees the judgment of pain, it sees the happiness, joy, it can see the worry about losing the joy that we experience, it can see the investment we have in something, how much we wish that certain experience stay with us forever, how much we wish that certain experiences be taken away from us because we don't like them. So it sees aversion, attraction. It's an extraordinary change of looking at life. It's a complete shift. It's not moving with the whole flow of birth, death, the arising of the sense of self, the arising of the I, me, and the ending of me, not birth, death in terms of physical birth, physical death, but just using that, what is birth right now? When the attachment to something is very strong, when we are really convinced that the thing we are attached to is real, then this is birth. And as there is birth, then there is death. It's very clearly described in some of the teachings of the Buddha, how called the dependent origination, how the causal condition that from ignorance arise suffering, and when ignorance is let go of, then suffering ends. So this is a profound teaching, and there's no judgment in there. It's a teaching that the Buddha is compassionate within ourselves. Compassionate in the sense that awareness doesn't have any position. It's not taking side with anything. You notice in yourself when you suddenly become mindful, there's no side anymore. It's a very unsettling experience because we're so used to take side for or against something. We're so used to that, to pass judgment, to have some ideas about how things should be. It is kind of slightly unsettling to suddenly not have any idea, but let the ideas come through awareness, through the quality of attentiveness, witness, presence, to allow the presence of your mind to inform you rather than fear, worry, anxiety and so on. So this is a complete shift, taking refuge no more into I, me, birth, death, future and past, clinging, worrying, but taking refuge in this knowing quality of the mind. It's a beautiful quality. And this is a quality that is needed, that one needs to cultivate, to train the mind. It's like without this dimension of awareness, it's very difficult to train the mind because you can't actually see it. You can only train something or by noticing that it needs training. You can't see that it needs training, then there's no chance. And you see that the mind needs training when you can see how mischievous and harmful its agenda can be. Harmful not just towards other people, but also towards oneself, how much there is a kind of tendency to be quite destructive, negative, critical, depressed, anxious. So the possibility of not being caught up in that whole realm of anxiety is an extraordinary thing. Possibility of witnessing anxiety or worry just as a passing thought, a passing feeling, a passing experience. It's quite extraordinary that we can do that. We can actually be the witness. So the Buddha is also the one who trains perfectly those who wish to be trained. the knowing mind, is that which shows you whether you are mindful, whether you are caught in your dramas, in your stories, and the quality of wakefulness. And it goes against the grain of habits, because our habits, it's all about survival, all about being attached to the body, being attached to the world of habits. So survival, habits, instinct to keep the old programs going. And it goes very deep. So it goes definitely against the grain of habit. It's quite a task that you have undertaken, to witness habits rather than follow them through or get entangled in them. And then being in a position of knowing, then the knowing takes you to the refuge in them. Second refuge, the Dhamma refuge. Ajahn Sumedho often pointed this paradigm of the Buddha knowing the Dhamma. When you're in a position of wakefulness, then you can see Dhamma. Things as Dhamma rather than me, mine, my problem, my little world. You can see them as Dhamma, and that's a very different quality. It's seeing the world very differently than... There's a universality about Dhamma which takes you out of the narrowness of the confinements of our attachments. A world of attachments is a very tight, narrow world. It lacks perspective, it lacks vision, it lacks all the things that could make our life much more happy, much lighter, much more joyful. So seeing the Dhamma. And in the description of the qualities of Dhamma that we pay respect to in the morning, it's apparent here now, not far away, not something remote and distant and out of reach. It's here now. It's like we're swimming in it all the time. We're breathing it. It's right with us all the time. All it takes is just a slight shift of perspective on things. Rather than grasping, we let go. And that very letting go is just what it takes to stop looking at the world as this fraught experience. The Dharma is timeless. You've noticed that when you are in the position of witnessing, you see thoughts coming and going, and thought is really what creates time. If you are not thinking, there's no time. When the mind is, you don't experience a sense of time when you're not caught into thinking, into your feelings, into your memory of past and future. When the mind is free from thought, then you can begin to have a taste of what is timelessness, which makes you appreciate how much we are attached to time. when the mind is obsessing with thoughts. We are more comfortable in that realm of time than timelessness, even though we wish to be more in a kind of timeless realm. But we are much more comfortable in the realm of time. It's more secure in many ways. The quality of timelessness is so vast, we can only stay there a short while, a very short time, and then suddenly we need to grasp at something. So that when we feel time is suspended for a while, it's good to get acquainted with that, just to feel how emotionally we respond to it. Is that, are we at ease with that, or do we feel frightened by the timeless? Dhamma in Pali is, it's a teaching of the Buddha, it's what realization takes you to. Instead of seeing from a point of attachment, you see from the point of non-attachment. And then you begin to get a sense of how universal your experiences are, instead of being crushed by your own dramas. You begin to see that Dhamma is seeing the quality, universal qualities of our thoughts, of our feelings, of our moods, of our mental states. We see the universal qualities, which are what? Impermanence, unsatisfactory in the sense that constantly changing. You can't grasp at it, you can't control it, you can't control your thoughts forever. And it's not self, and this is a difficult concept to understand, not self. It means it's universal, it doesn't belong to you. It's what the world is made of, and the world is made of, you know, the energies of the world is all about anger, greed, hatred, attachment to anything. So when you see something as Dhamma rather than anything else, it means you see it for what it is. It's like you're not deluded anymore by it. It comes and it goes, and it can come and go until the end of time, and you're still not deluded about it. It doesn't mean that the mind stops, or that things get resolved forever, or that things, you won't have any problems, or body and mind will disappear. It doesn't mean that. It means that whatever arises, you just know. You know it's impermanent, you know it's unsatisfactory, you know doesn't belong to you. And it's such a relief, because then you can really appreciate the spaciousness of your own mind, heart. You can appreciate its vastness, its extraordinary potential to be creative, to be to respond to life as it is rather than through fear and anxiety. To respond to your life situations in the way that is not motivated by fear and all the mental states that we still haven't seen as Dhamma. We still get caught in them, we get involved, we engage in them, get lost in them. So we haven't seen them as Dhamma yet. They're still me. Mine. We still feel that we have to do something about them, because somehow we haven't seen through their impermanence. We haven't seen through it yet. So it takes, you know, even though the Dhamma takes you to the timeless and you can realize the Dhamma in that witness which is timeless, I was going to say it takes time. It takes time to realize that for us we are always in the timeless. But because we create thinking, we're creators of our own perceptions and ideas and views on things, and because we love to create, we are really addicted to creating. We've got a strong addiction to that. You know, it takes time, in a way, to find out that we don't need to do that. We don't need, it's not necessary. And yesterday I was talking about container. The mindfulness acts like a container. It the stronger your mindfulness, the more easy it is to withstand the delusion of the mind. The more we can withstand the strength of delusion of the mind. Even mindfulness, it's not always easy to understand what it is, because we can easily overstep the mark by concentrating the mind, over-concentrating the mind, and thinking this is mindfulness. By shutting consciousness, shutting down conscious experience, we can think this is mindfulness. We still control the mind. We want to control life. If we control our mind, then we're going to control life, because our life is just the expression of our own mind. You know, the world we're living, the world that we are part of in our immediate environment, is an expression of what goes on inside us. And it's important to come to the point where you really know that very, very clearly, so that when you know this clearly, then it's wonderful, because then you can start training the mind. You can start, you can take responsibility. You can appreciate the fact that you can do something about it. You know, if your life is miserable, check out, what are you thinking? Are you seeing life as Dhamma, or are you seeing life as a problem? Are you creating a world of problems, or are you creating are you seeing the Dhamma? This is what these reflections are about. And when I say we take responsibility, we're not independent creatures. We are all interconnected. We have many conditions come together to make the person that I am at any given moment. We're not just isolated entity. So me personally, don't have to feel responsible for the whole world. I don't feel I have to sort out myself. But I can just be in that position of witnessing what's happening. Because we are creatures, we are beings with senses and sensitivity. We are very much affected by everything around us. People, weather, childhood, how we were brought up, how we were, you know, so many things that affect us at this time. As you see what you create, then you can start applying some very good skillful means to help you to be more conscious, to be less led by your mind. And to train the mind means to really channel the energy in such a way that it's going to be to your own benefit, rather than to destructive, rather than used in a destructive way. And the Dhamma is leading onwards. It's interesting because I was reading Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. Some of you may know Bhikkhu Bodhi was a famous, most famous scholar in the Theravada tradition. Also, probably the most famous translator in English, or the Pali Canon, most recent translations. And he was saying that leading onwards can be also translated as applicable. So it's something you can apply in your immediate environment. You can actually realize the Dhamma. You can apply this knowledge of Dhamma at any given moment. But the quality of Dhamma in the heart is also a quality of interest, leading onwards. It's a quality of aliveness. Even with the most depressed mental state, you're still interested. Even with the most miserable anger and pettiness, there's still practicing Dhamma, there's still a joyful interest in finding out what it's all about. Not in a sort of self-obsessive way, not in the way that you have to irritate everybody around you so you can realize Dhamma. Because the witness itself doesn't take you to self-obsession. You know, it's stepping out. It's not stepping away, but not looking at it as a problem anymore, but as an opportunity. As an opportunity to learn, to grow, to transform oneself, an opportunity to allow change to happen. You don't need to read a lot of books for practicing Dhamma. It's right here, right now, immediate, timeless, to be realized individually by the wise. So it's very clear, isn't it? It's not me who's going to realize it for you. It's not my partner who has to realize it for me. I have to realize myself. This is me. My dog can do that. My mother can't do that. It's an inner experience. And it's possible, it's available. I can't even expect my life situations to do that for me. In a way, in practicing Dhamma, there's also a realization of one's independence. At some level, you have to become quite independent from your external environment, in the sense that you can't expect the external environment to do the work for you, or the condition, external conditions, to wait for the right external conditions to do the work for you. It's really important to realize that the Dhamma is within oneself, to be realized by oneself. Naturally, certain conditions are more conducive to it than others. But if you don't have the right condition, it's just not, you know, it's not worth waiting for them. Because then you never, you know, you can wait for a long, long time and never allow change to happen, never allow the flow of life to happen. So today, during this second day of practice, I really encourage you to continue lightly, with a touch of, pinch of humor, to really let the witness, let the awareness lead the way, rather than what you want or what you... Let awareness be your guide. And awareness is not something tight or anything like that. It's you have a very clear teaching which says, you know, in walking, you know you're walking. In sitting, you know you're sitting. In eating, you know you are eating. In chewing, you know you are chewing. In getting up from the seat, you know you're getting up. In feeling bored, you know you're getting bored. In feeling upset, well, you just know you're upset. It's not a big deal, is it? It has a very relaxing effect, even though you may be getting in touch with all the tensions and all the stress that you have accumulated. By being in a position of witnessing, you're actually beginning to relax mind and body. It's a bit like a purge. It might not feel so good at first, but you're already in that position of letting go, relaxation. You're not holding anymore. So it is an act of faith, isn't it? It's a leap of faith, because the habits to want to do something, get involved and start new programs and new schedule and new, you know, find new means that works for me. Then on a retreat, on a Buddhist meditation retreat, then you are really encouraged just to just witness that, the tendency to want to chip in and do your own thing. It's much harder to be in the timelessness of awareness. You know. Especially when it's so simple. Walking, I know, you walk with your feet. It drives the mind bunker. If you noticed. As soon as you say, yes, keep it simple, everything is okay, life takes care of itself. Yes, but I've got to do something. I've got to work on my meditation practice. I've got to improve my walking. I've got to think better thoughts. I've got to feel better. So many things. Whole self self-improvement program kind of keeps being enacted again and again and again. They're not so strong, such a strong kind of tendency to want to improve oneself rather than witness this very imperfect self, which is absolutely fine when you don't get bogged down by it. You know, you don't have to improve on personality a lot. And personality don't change that much anyway. All that changes is the way we hold it. It's the way we relate to it. Through kindness, through loving relationship with it, through accepting, through relaxing with it, through talking to it nicely, friendly. Then the whole personality starts blossoming in a way that can help you in your Dharma practice, rather than be a hindrance, something that's got to be got rid of, improved on, shaped, reformed, reshaped, create and recreate ourselves. But no need to worry, you know. By letting mindfulness be your lead, you'll find that things get created and recreated beyond your anything you can imagine. So it doesn't need your program of delusion. It doesn't need it, actually. It can happen quite by itself. That's the nature of life, to change. It doesn't stay still for very long. These two refuges of Buddha, the awakened one, the mindful one, the knowing one, seeing the Dhamma, seeing the truth, seeing things as they are, is the practice, isn't it? That's the cornerstone of your practice. And the practice itself is very simple. So how do we do that? It's not that difficult. It's just the exercise that you are given in your meditation, just simply being present with every activities of the day, being conscious, being aware. Not in a kind of tight way, it's more like a relaxation actually. It's quite interesting because you learn how to relax. Mindfulness can be very relaxing. You know, we're so programmed to get tense when we do something or to tense up that as soon as we say, be mindful, immediately, it's like, be mindful. That's how we talk to ourselves, you know, be mindful. Ajahn Sundar said, be aware, be aware. And then we beat ourselves up when we think we're not aware. We can be really hard on ourselves. Okay, I missed that. I made that mistake. It's fine. You know, it's like beginning again, beginning again. This is the heart of practice. Beginning again. There's no improvement. We don't have to improve on things. But we have to keep reminding ourselves to be mindful. That's, if you want an improvement, that's it. I'll stop at this. We can end the sitting with some chanting. I like to do the chant today, which is called the Five Subjects for Recollection on page 46. Handamaya abhinapacha vekanapatam vanamase charamanatito. I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. Bhayadidhammo mi bhayadim manatito. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. Maranadhammo mi maranam manatito. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. Sambehi me pihehi manapehi nana bhavo vinabhavo. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. Kamma sakomi kamma dayado kamma yoni kamma ban kamma pati sarano yang kammam karisami kalayana wa papakam wa dhasadhayadho bhavisami. I am the owner of my kamma, heir to my kamma, born of my kamma, related to my kamma, abide supported by my kamma. Whatever kamma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the end. He waha mehi habinam pacha vikitabam. Thus we should frequently recollect. So, this is one of your reflections for the day. And then we end on a nice happy note. On page 41. So this is, the first one is your reflection for life. The second one is how to handle that reflection with loving kindness. And now let us chant the reflection on universal well-being. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself, May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such act, they will be the end. And now we do the closing homage. Arahaṁ Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, Uddham Bhagavantam Abhivatemi. I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Svākato Bhagavata Dhammo. The teaching so completely explained by him. Dhammam Namasami. I bow to the Dhamma. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho. The blessed ones, disciples who have practiced well. Sangha Namami. I bow to the Sangha.